This is the RTE News at 1 with Brian Dobson. Good afternoon. The headlines this Friday lunchtime. We're just hearing news from Belfast that the DUP leader, Geoffrey Donaldson, has resigned. More on that in the course of the programme. In other headlines, 19 people have been arrested on suspicion of intoxication as part of the Garda's bank holiday weekend road safety enforcement campaign. Israel has carried out its deadliest strike in months in the northern Syrian province of Aleppo. And the authorities in South Africa say rescue workers have so far retrieved 20 bodies from the site of yesterday's bus crash, in which at least 45 people were killed. The news in detail now with Vivian Traynor.
The DUP has announced that Geoffrey Donaldson has stepped down as leader. In a statement issued in the past few moments, the party said he had been charged with allegations of an historical nature, and in accordance with the party rules, the party officers had suspended Mr. Donaldson from membership pending the outcome of a judicial process. An Garda Síochána's bank holiday weekend road safety enforcement campaign is underway, with checkpoints deployed to test for alcohol and drugs across the weekend. So far, 19 people have been arrested on suspicion of intoxication. Meanwhile, it's one of the busiest weekends of travel, with almost 500,000 passengers expected to pass through Dublin Airport over the coming days. Brian Clark reports.
19 motorists have been arrested on suspicion of driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs during the first 24 hours of the Gardaí's Easter bank holiday road safety campaign. The campaign got underway at 7 o'clock yesterday morning and will remain in place until 7 o'clock on Tuesday, the 2nd of April. Gardaí have said those figures are up 13 from the same time last year. It comes as they have urged road users to drive safely with an increased risk of being involved in a fatal or serious road traffic collision over the bank holiday week. So far this year, 55 people have lost their lives in incidents on Irish roads, an increase of 13 on the same time last year. Meanwhile, 105,000 passengers will pass through Dublin Airport today in what the DAA expects to be the busiest day of the long weekend. DAA spokesman Graham McQueen said things have been moving smoothly so far today, with no delays for passengers getting through security. Éireann Road Éireann has warned that DART services will not run between Grand Canal Dock and Bray from tomorrow until Easter Monday, as it carries out essential maintenance works. Irish Rail said there will be bus transfers from Bray and Greystones to Grand Canal Dock, with Go Ahead and Dublin Bus honouring rail tickets from impacted routes.
Israel has carried out its deadliest strikes in months on northern Syria's Aleppo province, stepping up its campaign against Iran-backed groups in parallel with its war in Gaza. 36 Syrian soldiers and 6 Hezbollah fighters were reportedly killed on the attack on rocket depositories. Angus Cox of our foreign staff.
The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said Israeli airstrikes killed at least 42 people near Aleppo in Syria, adding that the target was rocket depositories used by Hezbollah. Israel has been attacking the Iranian-backed militia group's strongholds in Syria since 2011. Events in Gaza have been the catalyst for the escalation in the conflict enveloping the region, and Israel's war on Hamas in the enclave continues to take a huge toll. The Hamas-run health ministry says nearly 33,000 people have been killed over the past 5 months. However, in a rare positive development, Japan confirmed it's preparing to resume funding to the UN Palestinian Refugee Agency. Japan was among more than a dozen countries that stopped funding after Israel claimed UNRWA employees were involved in the October 7 Hamas attacks.
In the United States, an election fundraiser for US President Joe Biden has been interrupted by several protests criticizing the president's handling of the war in Gaza. Guests at the event in New York included Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. Demonstrators outside the event denounced president's support of Israel, while discussions between the president and his predecessors inside the building were interrupted on several occasions by heckles from protesters in the audience. Gardaí are continuing to question 2 men in connection with a suspected arson attack on a Galway hotel late last year. The Ross Lake House Hotel was extensively damaged in the fire in mid-December. It had been earmarked to serve as an accommodation centre for asylum seekers. The men, one in his 40s, the other in his 50s, were arrested yesterday morning. They're being questioned about alleged criminal damage. 2 women who were also arrested yesterday in connection with the same investigation have been released without charge. The authorities in South Africa say rescue workers have so far retrieved 20 bodies from the site of yesterday's bus crash. The bus was carrying worshippers for an Easter church service when it plunged off a bridge into a ravine, killing at least 45 people. The sole survivor, an 8-year-old girl, is being treated in hospital. The names of all those killed during the Troubles are being read aloud at a special service in Dublin today. The commemoration at the Dublin Unitarian Church on St. Stephen's Green is in its 22nd and final year. The ceremony began at midday in the names of nearly 3,600 people who died as a result of the conflict in Northern Ireland are being read out. The event will continue until around 3 o'clock this afternoon. The church's management committee decided that since there has been no one killed in political violence in Northern Ireland in nearly 5 years, it was time to end the commemoration. And now the weather.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. Building a new home? Choose Grant's A++ rated Airona heat pump and Uflex underfloor heating. Visit grant.ie.
Sunshine and scattered showers today. The showers becoming fairly widespread across the country during the afternoon. Some of them will be heavy and of hail with a few thunderstorms possible. Highest temperatures 8 to 12 degrees. Brian.
Thanks, Vivian. We're going straight to Belfast this lunchtime to that shock resignation of Geoffrey Donaldson as leader of the DUP following what are described as allegations of a historic nature. Our Northern editor Vincent Kearney joins us now. Vincent, this news just breaking in the last few minutes. What can you tell us?
Well, Brian, as you say, just breaking, a shock announcement. Now, there were indications and suspicions that something was afoot when early this morning people had noticed that all of Geoffrey Donaldson's social media accounts had vanished. X, formerly Twitter, LinkedIn and other accounts had simply been wiped. And then we were told there's an emergency meeting of the DUP's ruling party officer team at 10 o'clock this morning. Now, at that meeting, they were given this news. And afterwards, they issued a statement. And worth reading the statement, Brian, it says that the party chairman has received a letter from Sir Geoffrey Donaldson MP confirming that he has been charged with allegations of an historical nature and indicating that he is stepping down as leader of the Democratic Unionist Party with immediate effect. Now, the statement adds that in accordance with the party rules, the party officers have suspended Mr. Donaldson from the party pending the outcome of a judicial process. The party officers have this morning unanimously appointed Mr. Gavin Robinson MP as the interim party leader. So quite a shock. No one saw this coming.
And at this early stage, it is an early stage, has there been any reaction? Is there any comment, Vincent, in relation to what might this might mean for the stability of the only very recently reformed power-sharing executive?
Well certainly, there is a certainty within the party. I'm told the DUP is in a state of shock. I'm told it's in meltdown. There was a lot of shock when apparently news of this pending statement started to actually circulate among senior party members last night, and then again at that emergency meeting this morning. There will certainly be some concern, Brian, around stability, because this was Geoffrey Donaldson's deal to go back into Stormont. He pushed it through in what's believed to be in a majority of 60-40. So it's fairly tight. It was a very personal crusade by him to get back into Stormont. This will now lead to a leadership contest. Now, names have been mentioned around that are potentially Gavin Robinson, the interim leader, potentially Paul Given, the education minister at the moment. Now, they were both in Geoffrey Donaldson's camp in the sense that they supported the return to devolution. So if one of them emerges as leader, then it maybe won't mean that much of a change. But it's entirely possible, Brian, that leadership contest could pit someone who was in favour of returning to devolution against one of those within the party who was against it and thought it was a bad idea. So that could lead to certainly a fractious debate. It could lead to severe tension within the party. And if someone on the other side of this debate was to emerge victorious, then that could place a question mark over the future of those institutions. But certainly at this stage, I don't detect any immediate nervousness. No one thinks that this is going to immediately lead to a crash of the Stormont institutions, but it certainly places a question mark over them.
And clearly a major political figure in unionism now leaving the stage. Geoffrey Donaldson has been at the centre of so much of Northern Ireland politics for many decades. A former Ulster unionist, he broke with that party over the Good Friday Agreement, joined the DUP and rose eventually to be leader.
He did indeed. Of course, he replaced Edmund Poots as leader. Edmund Poots had a very short stay as leader indeed before there was an internal revolt against him. Donaldson was seen as a very calming figure. People have talked about Geoffrey Donaldson potentially uniting unionism going forward. His mantra was that they couldn't divide unionists because if you divided unionist vote was good news for Sinn Féin. And in recent months, he's been pushing that line. He had reached out to the Ulster Unionist Party. He made it clear that going forward, he would again like to see a Greek candidates. There have been talk in some quarters, Brian, of possibly a single large unionist party emerging, and Geoffrey Donaldson was seen as integral to all of that, and that is now all gone as well. And what his legacy will be, well, that'll be written, I would imagine, after whatever judicial process follows.
So just to be clear about this, Vincent, Gavin Robinson takes over as interim leader, and there will be a leadership contest.
That is not mentioned in the statement. It simply says as interim leader, but I think the clue is there, is it is interim leader. I think the party is likely to wait to see the outcome of any judicial process, and then if Geoffrey Donaldson is not in a position to return to party membership or party leadership, it won't continue with an interim leader, and I'd imagine it won't simply be a case of rubber stamping him. I would say the way the party operates is the party rules would dictate that there will have to be a leadership contest.
All right, Vincent, thank you very much for that. We're joined now on the line by commentator Alex Kane, who's a former Unionist Party activist, and now comments, as I say, on political affairs in Northern Ireland. Alex Kane, this news just breaking in the last few minutes. I mean, can you make some assessment of the political implications of what we're hearing?
Hi, Brian. Well, I think we've known for the past few hours that something very dramatic was happening and focused on Geoffrey Donaldson. And it is huge. His standing as leader has thrown the DUP into a huge turmoil because, as your previous speaker said there, while Gavin Robinson will be stepping up as interim party leader, it will force a leadership election. And that, of course, that election will reopen the whole battle the party had over whether or not they should return to Stormont for this deal. So at this stage, my instinct at this moment would be that the party will probably vote to continue to stay in there, but that's not a given. But the more interesting battle will be that, although Geoffrey Donaldson has issued a statement and so on, I think it's also inevitable that there will be a by-election. I think he will, I'm pretty sure he will stand down as Member of Parliament for Lygon Valley in the next maybe days, certainly within a couple of weeks, because they would have to clear that with the Speaker of the House of Commons. If that happens, that forces a really big inter-unionist battle on the whole devolution and deal thing, and I think that is one of the most important impacts to look out for in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
We know, Alex, that he wrestled for months and had to deal with very significant internal divisions within the DUP in relation to going back into power sharing at Stormont. To what extent has he been the glue that's held unionism together through this period?
Well, the deal wouldn't have happened without him, because he decided after hemming and hawing for quite some time, which I'd written about in the past, he suddenly seemed to take possession of it, decided that this was going to be his legacy. He was going to get this deal done, get it through, get it sorted, and so on. And the difficulty with all this, Ben, I'm going to be extraordinarily cautious right now. There are voices in unionism saying that his change of heart is a result of people putting pressure on them because they knew there was another story out there. That could be a complicating factor further down the line as well. But it is true to say that if we're assuming there was no connection between them, there would not now be an assembly up and running had it not been for Geoffrey Donaldson. And I think that, again, if people start questioning why he suddenly had to change of heart, because he was being cheered a few weeks ago, people said, yes, this is a leader finally showing courage. Of course, the nature of politics, the nature of everything, social media and media generally, is people will not start saying, but why is there any connection between these two events? And that, again, will have unexpected and complicated impacts.
And who, Alex, would be likely, do you think, to throw their hats in the ring in a leadership contest?
My gut instinct, again, Brian, is what we talked about, but only knowing the story in the past 20 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. My gut instinct is that they will leave Gavin Robinson in place because there's a general election coming anyway. They really don't want a messy party election between pro-deal and anti-deal because that would cause problems for them. So I think there's no one immediately jumps to mind. You know, you have Ian Paisley Jr., who's not really loved by the party. You have Sammy Wilson, but Sammy is about 70 and is probably, I think, could do without the hassle. He really doesn't want it. And there really aren't any other people. And some people have talked about Emma Pengelly, who is the Deputy First Minister and a DUP member. The trouble is, if Emma were the candidate, for example, as leader, if she was she's been looked at for Lygon Valley, but in terms of the leadership, she didn't get elected. She stood for election, failed to get elected. Donaldson gifted her the seat because he had won the seat. I think a lot of people say, no, we cannot have a Deputy First Minister who doesn't have a mandate, and we certainly can't have a leader who does not have a mandate. So I suspect when you look at all of that, a quiet decision will be made just to let Gavin keep on with the job.
Very good. Alex Kane in Belfast this lunchtime. Clearly as many questions as answers to this development just in the last half an hour or so. There we take a break, but still to come this lunchtime, Israel's biggest strike in months against Hezbollah targets in Syria. Prison officers warn overcrowding is a ticking time bomb. The horror bus crash in South Africa. The 45 victims were Easter pilgrims from Botswana. The maximum recruitment age for the Reserve Defence Forces increases to 39 in a bid to enlist more part-time soldiers and sailors. And two masterpieces by the painter Caravaggio are set for a rare reunion at the Ulster Museum in Belfast.
Did you know there's a 1 in 3 lifetime risk of developing shingles? The risk of shingles increases with age and in those with weakened immune systems. Patients describe shingles as a burning, stabbing or itching feeling, usually accompanied by a painful rash. Ask your doctor, pharmacist or practice nurse about shingles and visit understandingshingles.ie to learn more. Understanding Shingles, brought to you by GSK in association with Chronic Pain Ireland.
At B&Q, get 3 for 2 on interior paint and paint mixing and 4 for 3 on laminate and luxury vinyl plick flooring. That's a big spring refresh for less. Shop in-store or online at diy.ie. You can do it when you B&Q it. Exclusions apply. Ends 8th of April. See diy.ie.
Hello again. You're listening to the news at one. Dozens have been reported killed in Syria after Israel carried out its deadliest airstrikes there in months. Israel says it killed a deputy commander of Hezbollah during strikes on Syria's Aleppo province, representing a major ramping up of Israel's campaign against Iran's proxies in the Middle East. Meanwhile, the International Court of Justice has told Israel to ensure more aid gets into Gaza, as the UN warns that 1.1 million people face catastrophic levels of food insecurity. Fawaz Gurgis is Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics. He joins us now. Fawaz, thank you for taking our call this lunchtime. Welcome once again to the News at One. These strikes against Hezbollah targets in Syria, why now?
Well, I mean, I think this represents a qualitative escalation on the part of Israel. The irony is that the Security Council resolution called on Israel to ceasefire and de-escalate. What we have seen since the Security Council resolution was passed unanimously, with the exception of the United States abstaining, Israel really has escalated its attacks in Gaza, on the West Bank, in Syria. And now the reports that are coming out of Syria, we're talking about 50 casualties, including about 35 Syrian soldiers, 5 Hezbollah members, and several civilians. My take on it is that what Israel really, what the war cabinet has been trying to do is to really push Hezbollah to the wall. We're talking about Lebanon's Hezbollah. Mm-hmm. And to really provoke Hezbollah, to push Hezbollah to the limits. And this really represents part of a strategic decision on the part of the war cabinet to really engage Hezbollah in a longer and bigger and greater conflict than the skirmishes we have witnessed in the past 6 months.
Even though that would represent Israel opening a second front in this war?
Well, there are multiple fronts, as you know. I mean, all of us, we're talking about Israel's onslaught in Gaza, which has killed more than 32,000 Palestinians and injured about 75,000 Palestinians. I mean, think of what's happening on the West Bank. Have we talked about almost 500 Palestinians who have been killed on the West Bank? Literally every day, there is an Israeli attack on either by the Israeli army or by the settlers on Palestinians. You have almost a low intensity war on the Lebanese Israeli border. You're talking about 350 Lebanese who have been killed as a result of the trading of fire between Israel and Hezbollah. Not to mention the fact, I mean, the Red Sea, the Houthis attacks against commercial shippings. What we are really seeing is that the war in Gaza has escalated near and wide. Even though we're having a low-intensity warfare, this could really escalate into all-out regional war if the situation continues as it is.
Meanwhile, we have this warning yet again from the UN of the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. People there were being told well over a million facing catastrophic levels of food insecurity. The International Court of Justice saying that Israel needs to ensure more aid gets into Gaza. But it seems Israel really is completely impervious to these international appeals.
Well, why should Israel really care about what the international community says? Why should Israel care about what the Security Council says? Why should Israel says about what the International Court of Justice says, as long as the United States of America shields Israel? I mean, imagine for your listeners that the first time in history where the United States of America, the Joe Biden administration says a decision by the Security Council is not binding. What does it do to the international institutions? So Israel's strategy is very simple. As long as the United States shields us in the international system, we'll do exactly what we want to do. And that's exactly what Benjamin Netanyahu is doing. Don't imagine for a second that Israel will end its war in Gaza or basically allows Palestinians who are starved. By the way, it's not about the threat of starvation. Famine and starvation now is real. More than 50 Palestinian children have already died as a result of starvation. And the report by the United Nations, this is not about politics, about the fact that Palestinians now, particularly in northern Gaza, you have 300,000 Palestinians who are starved as you and I talk now on air.
Fergus Gagras from the London School of Economics, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. Here, the Prison Officers Association is warning that overcrowding in Irish prisons is a ticking time bomb. According to official figures, almost 5,000 people are currently being held in prisons across the country, with Cork, Limerick, Cloverhill, Castlereagh and Mountjoy prisons the most overcrowded. Bunk beds have been added to many cells to increase capacity, while almost 200 inmates are sleeping on mattresses on the floor of cells. As reported in today's Irish Examiner, the association representing prison officers has warned that the system is at breaking point. Gabriel Keaveney is the Deputy General Secretary of the POA and is on the line. A very good afternoon to you and thank you for taking our call this afternoon. Your members have been living with prison overcrowding for very many years now. This isn't something new. Why do you say we're getting to a point where we could be at breaking point?
Good afternoon, Brian. Because we've reached a situation now where we've practically no other place to put prisoners. And if you look at, say, our modern, say, most modern prison, Cork Prison, every cell in Cork Prison, with the exception of a handful, is doubled up. And there's still 50 prisoners sleeping on the floor. If you go to A1 landing in Castlereagh, designed to hold 34 prisoners, there's nearly 80 prisoners on that landing. There's 10 people on the floor and all the cells are doubled up. We're saying, in my 33 years at this business, we've never seen the levels of overcrowding heretofore. And we have been dealing with it, and it's very, very challenging for our members. However, the current situation in around 5,000 prisoners with 500 out on temporary release, it's unsustainable. We're saying that as prison officers.
Are too many people being sent to prison by the courts?
Well, I mean, that's an issue for the courts. All we can deal with it at the coalface, our members can deal with what is the real work, dealing with drugs running in over the walls, organised crime gangs, and challenging individuals at the best of days. So you put that in an environment which is chronically overcrowded, then it's a recipe for disaster. And that's what we've told both the Director General of the Prison Service and the Minister in recent times. We're sorry to have to say that, but I mean, with the days ahead and the weeks ahead unfortunately does not bode well.
What the prison service are saying today is that they use inter-prison transfers and temporary release as a way to try to address the issue. Is there more they could be doing in that regard?
Well, that's called moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic with the greatest respect. There's no place to transfer prisoners to. We have come up with suggestions. We've asked them to reopen the Curragh prison. We've asked them to look at the old Cork prison. Certain sections of it could be reopened. We've asked them to install 8-unit modular houses at Castlereagh. They've rejected all our proposals, but they've come up with none themselves. All their proposals are singular modular units at a cost of €400,000 each. You'd build a 5-bedroom detached house for it. So the reality is the prison service are defunct of any ideas in relation to this. Meanwhile, our members at the Coalface are dealing with chronically overcrowded conditions in really, really challenging situations.
And if this is a ticking time bomb, as you say, what might cause that to detonate?
What happens, unfortunately, Brian, is this can only continue for a certain length of time. And as we head into the summer and the evenings get longer, it's unsustainable that you have this number of prisoners, like 100% extra in a load of areas, hundreds of bunk beds. You put that together with all the other challenges that you face in a prison community. And for us, this 5,000 figure or anywhere near it is literally unsustainable. It's a conflict that emerges through the competition for resources, for tuck shops, for visits, for all the areas of prisoners, workshops that they access. The competition for those areas increases. And if they don't get access, obviously, to services, and they're cooped in their cells all day, are left in there, that's hugely problematic for our members.
As you've referred to it, I mean, there is significant funding committed to capital projects in relation to providing extra prison spaces, but that is something which we're perhaps some years or more away from. So what you're saying today is that there are temporary, emergency, immediate measures needed.
Absolutely. Any funding that's announced now is between 3 and 5 years away before an extra set is created. So we need emergency situations, emergency proposals from the prison service today, not in 6 weeks' time or 6 years' time. We need the spaces as we're going forward into this year. They're coming up with a handful of spaces. They're absolutely of no use whatsoever. The only alternative they have is more prisoners on the floor or let out prisoners. That's the only alternative they have.
Gabriel Keaveney, Deputy General Secretary of the Prison Office Association. Thanks for talking to us. An investigation is continuing in South Africa after a bus crash yesterday that killed 45 of the 46 passengers on board. The bus, which was travelling from Botswana to Limpopo province for an Easter pilgrimage, left the road and plunged down a ravine. The sole survivor is an 8-year-old girl who's been treated in hospital. We've been hearing more from Nicole McCain of News 24 South Africa.
So Brian, what we do know at this stage, it's been confirmed that all of the victims in the bus crash were travelling from Botswana to the Limpopo province in South Africa. They had the accident on what we call an R518 road. It's a regional road in Limpopo. And we understand that they were travelling to attend an Easter pilgrimage. It's an annual tradition in South Africa amongst the Zion Christian Church to have this Easter pilgrimage. And this is the first year since the pandemic that they've held this occasion. It draws thousands of people from all over the country and from our neighbouring countries to attend. At this stage, the passenger list is showing that there were 46 people on board the bus, including the driver. Only one of them was a child. We do know that the only surviving person from the crash was an 8-year-old girl. She sustained serious injuries, and she's currently in hospital being treated for those injuries. The other passengers and driver on board from the accident, they've currently recovered 34 bodies. Of those, only 9 have been identified. It's quite a horrific crash. We understand that the bus went off a bridge and plummeted about 50 meters down into a ravine. The bus then caught a light. So, of course, a lot of the bodies are very badly burnt, and that's going to make it a little bit more difficult to identify them.
And has it been possible to establish why the bus left the road, why it came off the bridge?
So there is an investigation underway to try and establish what caused the accident. At the moment, the details are very scant. We just know that presumably the driver lost control of the vehicle. It crashed into the barrier on the bridge and then plummeted over the edge. It is a single lane in either direction, the road, and it, that bridge is on quite a curve. So it is possible that the various factors could have come into play that would have caused the bus to overturn.
Well, I see President Ramaphosa has conveyed his condolences to Botswana and to the family and friends of those who died. At this stage, are our family being able to make their way to the scene, to the site, or to recover their loved ones' remains?
So, yes, you are quite right. President Ramaphosa has sent his condolences to those families and to the Botswanan people. At this stage, we are still trying to identify the victims. From what we understand, once that process is complete, when they identify the victims, our authorities will be working with the Botswanan authorities to notify the families and then, of course, to start the process of repatriating the bodies.
Well, what's been the reaction in South Africa to this, Nicole? Are people shocked at the scale of the loss of life here?
Absolutely, Brian. You know, we annually have road fatalities over the Easter period. It is a very busy period on our roads. Last year, over this period nationally, we had more than 200 deaths on the road. And to put into context the scope of this single accident with 45 people presumed dead, last year, over the four-day Easter weekend, there were just over 40 people killed in the Limpopo province. That's all of the accidents across the entire province. So it really is a massive accident. It's been absolutely horrific, and people have been quite shocked by the magnitude of it.
And that's Nicole McCain speaking to us a little earlier from South Africa. Back with more after this short break.
This bank holiday weekend, it really could be... Yahoo! That's right. There's one bank holiday millionaire guaranteed in the Lotto Plus raffle. A millionaire? That would certainly put a bit of... Yahoo! Into your long weekend. So play Lotto with Plus this Saturday for your chance to become Ireland's newest millionaire. The National Lottery. This bank holiday weekend, it could be you. Play responsibly. Play for fun.
RTE Radio 1.
Arcade Fire, live in concert. Plus, Echo and the Bunnymen. Malahide Castle, July 7th. Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie. Subject to license. Experience the band perform their debut album, Funeral, in its entirety. Plus much more. Arcade Fire. Tickets available now.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Hello again. You're listening to the news at 1. Two masterpieces by the Italian painter Caravaggio are set for a rare reunion at the Ulster Museum in Belfast. The Supper at Emmaus and The Taking of Christ, both painted in the early 1600s, have rarely been seen together since the first quarter of the 17th century. The exhibition comes about thanks to the UK's National Treasures Project, which will see the Supper at Emmaus loaned by the National Gallery in London to the Ulster Museum, while separately the National Gallery of Ireland in Dublin is sending The Taking of Christ to Belfast. Let's talk to Dr. Caroline Campbell, who's director of the National Gallery of Ireland and is on the line now. Dr. Campbell, a very good afternoon to you and welcome to the News at One.
Hello, thank you very much. Very pleased to be with you this lunchtime.
Now, I think what should be said at the outset is that these two masterpieces were in fact commissioned by the same patron, weren't they, and originally hung side by side.
That's right. They were commissioned for a man called Ciriaco Mattei in the early 1600s in Rome. So they have an incredible shared history. And they've been, but since the 17th century, they've only been together on a few occasions. One, I should say, was in Dublin in 2017. But this loan to Belfast is a very exciting moment for art lovers in Northern Ireland. It's the first time that any painting by Caravaggio has been on display, I think, in Northern Ireland.
And these are two paintings which were executed really when Caravaggio was at the very height of his powers.
Absolutely. I mean, Caravaggio is an extraordinary artist. He's very well known today for the way in which he uses strong contrasts of light and shade in his pictures to really tell a story with great emotion through a few figures. And that's really true in The Taking of Christ, which shows the moment when Christ realizes that he is being betrayed by Judas, who he thought was his friend and also his disciple. And it's the moment of the kiss, of course, when the Roman soldiers who've do just bring, see who Christ is. And there's such an incredible sense of resignation on Christ's face. And Caravaggio shows this with great emotion and with great humanity.
And there's great drama as well in the Supper at Emmaus. It also is a moment of recognition where, when the disciples realize that this is the risen Christ.
Indeed, it's a moment from slightly later in the New Testament story. It's when the apostles, where the disciples are walking, they have supper at Emmaus with a man they've met along the way, and they are breaking bread when they realize that this person is Jesus. And one of them gets up from the table and puts his arms out to demonstrate his incredible all-body shock at this moment. So Caravaggio, in both these paintings, uses human figures to tell emotion, which is really divine. And that's what makes his work so powerful.
Caroline, thanks very much indeed for talking to us. Dr. Caroline Campbell there, Director of the National Gallery of Ireland, and the exhibition opens on the 10th of May at the Ulster Museum. Changes to the retirement age and maximum recruitment age for military personnel come into effect from today. Tánaiste Minister for Defence Micheál Martin has announced that the changes will also apply to the Reserve Defence Forces to bring them into line with recently announced changes for the Permanent Defence Force, the PDF. We've been talking to Lieutenant Colonel Ian Conlon of the Army Reserve about today's changes.
The rationale for this is basically for the reservists to get in line with our PDF colleagues. And as Ireland, like every other country, basically is facing, we say, shortage of specialists and shortage of personnel, that effectively this means that we're not going to basically have to ask people who are reaching a younger age to actually leave the organisation. And indeed, having the higher recruitment age will mean that we can attract an older applicant who in the past may have not maybe considered a career in either the Permanent or the Reserve Defence Force.
And in particular, have the Defence Forces struggled to recruit people to the Reserve?
No, in one sense, like currently we have a recruitment competition ongoing at the moment, and we're getting good numbers for that. One of the things that I suppose a lot of, we'll say, Western militaries, not just our own, are suffering at the moment is basically, we'll say, a lack of people considering the military as a career option, whether into either as a full-time occupation or indeed as a reserve occupation.
Yeah,
so we again are working towards making efforts like this to make it more attractive for people to join.
So specifically then, what are the opportunities in the Reserve Defence Forces for people who might give it some consideration?
Okay, well, there's an awful lot of opportunities. And one of the big things when you look at what kind of reserve, what kind of person are we looking to join the reserve, that effectively we're looking at basically it's open to everybody. We want basically a reserve that represents, the current Ireland, the modern Ireland, and people from all communities. And it's a great opportunity to learn new skills, travel, and from a fitness. And also the big thing that we speak about basically is camaraderie, where you can basically meet friends, which you will have for the rest of your life, and basically work as part of a big team.
And if you sign up, what do you do? What's the commitment?
Okay, so initially you sign up for an initial period, and effectively when you sign up, you would have to do a level of basic training. Now, this training is modular in its nature, so it means that it's either done at weekends or it's done periods of full-time training, which none of them are longer than 14 days. Mm-hmm. We can also use modern, we'll say, methods of training now, which would be, we'll say, online training, etc. as well. But initially when you join, you would be expected, in order to do your basic training, that you would have to basically spend sort of a time in a military location garnering the basic skills that are required to operate in the military.
What kind of things do you learn? I mean, is it weapons training? Are you learning about tactics? What does a modern reserve Defence Forces member do?
Well, if you look at the tasks that that the reserve are assigned, they're exactly the same as the PDF, so which is the Permanent Defence Forces. And effectively, the reservist, when they are trained, they have to augment and support the PDF if and when required. And if the training that's required for that is military skills, they are all covered on that. And even things like, we say, foot drill, navigation, tacticals, weapons, etc. And this is all done in a training environment, which basically instills leadership, teamwork, etc. in all the individuals. So yes, it's definitely training that can be challenging, but is most definitely rewarding.
And this could be somebody who's enlisting as a private soldier, an NCO or an officer. And are there opportunities in all three branches, in the Army, the Naval Service and the Air Corps?
Yes, so currently the way the reserve is organised, we currently only have an Army and a Naval Reserve. We have the Commission on Defence report, which your listeners would have heard about, and basically one of the recommendations from that, which will be implemented, will be the development, but it's currently at an exploratory stage, of an Air Force Reserve. And that will have minimum 200 people in that. Mm-hmm. And again, the people who will join that will be basically supporting the PDF colleagues as the Army and Naval Service Reserve currently do.
And that's Lieutenant Colonel Ian Conlon of the Army Reserve. Now, returning to that news within the last hour, that Geoffrey Donaldson has stepped down as leader of the Democratic Unionist Party. The DUP chairman said that it had received a letter from Mr. Donaldson confirming that he, Mr. Donaldson, had been charged by police with allegations of a historic nature. DUP MP Gavin Robinson has been appointed interim party leader. Brian Feeney, Irish News columnist, is on the line. Now, Brian, thanks for taking our call. What are likely to be the political implications of this shock news?
Well, initially, the response to people has just been stunned silence and shock. I mean, it's a political bombshell. However, the fact of the matter is the DUP is split and has been split on whether or not to go back into Stormont. And, you know, at least half the MPs didn't agree with Geoffrey Donaldson, like Sammy Wilson, Ian Paisley and so on. And at least half a dozen, maybe as many as 10 MLAs are unhappy about going back into Stormont with the Irish sea border still in place. So it remains to be seen whether or not they will accept this sudden move by the party officers. The party officers moved very quickly this morning to suspend Sir Geoffrey Donaldson's membership of the DUP and appoint Gavin Robinson. Really, as many people think, as a way to stop some sort of attempted coup or the dissidents within the party taking action. But it remains to be seen what will happen and what the broader reaction will be, because people in the DUP as a whole haven't had a chance to respond or to communicate with each other.
All right. Early days, as you say. We'll leave it there for now, Brian. Thanks very much, Brian Feeney from the Irish News. More on this, no doubt, in the course of the day.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
And it's a very good afternoon to Greg Allen.
Afternoon, Brian. Ireland's second row forward, Sam Monaghan, will captain Ireland in Sunday's Women's Six Nations match with Italy at the RDS. The Meath woman comes into the second row to partner Dorothy Wall after recovering fully from the concussion which forced her absence from the game against France. Head coach Scott Beamond makes four changes to his side from the opening defeat to France last week, and among the surprise omissions is last week's captain, wing forward Adele McMahon, who doesn't make the match day squad on Sunday. Her spot in the back row is taken by Grace Moore. Two changes to the back line. Dan O'Brien coming in at half, Enya Breen coming into the centre. Big game tonight at the RDS in the URC, with the leaders Leinster up against second place Vodacom Bulls, who will have a number of South Africa's World Cup winners in their lineup. Kickoff is at 7:35. Bayer Leverkusen head coach Xabi Alonso has quashed any speculation about moving to one of his former clubs, Liverpool or Bayern Munich, as he today committed his future to the Bundesliga leaders for another season in a statement in his Friday press conference inside the last hour. The German side, Leverkusen, and they lead the Bundesliga by 10 points from Bayern. They've won 22 of their 26 matches, drawn the other four, and with that extraordinary record, Alonso was a prime target for both Bayern and Liverpool, whose managers are stepping down at the end of the current season. Now in the Championship in England...